The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Welcome back to the official Project Blue Book podcast. I'm your host, Tara Bennett, a senior producer for Sci-Fi Wire. So we have got a huge treat for our listeners this week to discuss Episode 5, Foo Fighters. Creator and co-executive producer David O'Leary, hello.
Hey, everybody.
And we also have showrunner executive producer Sean Dablonsky.
Hello.
And we have Heineken in the house. We have Michael Malarkey back in the room. Hello, sir.
Hey there.
And for the first time on our show, Mr. Aidan Gillen. Hello.
Hello there.
It's so lovely to have you to be able to talk about the arc, about playing Heineck. But as we usually always start, we're going to talk a little bit about selecting the background case for the emotional stuff that happens in the forefront of this episode. So the Foo Fighters.
The fascinating thing about quote-unquote Foo Fighters was these were mysterious orbs of light seen on both sides of the conflict amidst World War II that each side at the time thought was some sort of top-secret aircraft from the other side. And so during the war, it was just sort of something to fear as like something that the enemy had. And then, of course, after World War II ended in 1945, you know, who was that? Who's got this crazy top-secret technology? And neither side could own up to it because neither side, in fact, had it. The term Foo Fighters was just a term that sort of came out during the war that fighters in the sky and pilots and people nicknamed for these mysterious, intelligent, moving orbs of light. Sean and I and everybody just sort of felt we should explore something that kind of places the show a little bit in history, too. Like, you know, we were just a couple of years after World War II.
This was a different episode for us in that we sort of backed into the Foo Fighter idea, really. And I think this is where the show is really finding its legs in a way. It's because it's really about Heineck's desire to go after Fuller and find out what's happening and then pulling in Quinn with him. And so rather than make it feel like it's just a chase show and how we're going to do that, we married it with a case, whereas normally we sort of flipped it. So it felt like a very natural progression of storytelling. And I think something that the show is going to do more of.
So, Aidan, we're halfway through the season by this point with this episode. Watching it, it really feels like he's getting pinched because at home, his wife, Mimi, and his kid have been threatened by Fuller. So that's personal. And then we realize he's escaped through the generals at the top of the story. And then getting answers. You've got the transmission that you tracked down. You've got Kavanaugh. Tell me a little bit about, in this headspace, the push and pull of playing Heineck. And in particular, what was interesting for you as a piece with this one?
Yeah, I think you are correct in saying that you see him or feel him in a bit of a pinch at this point. I think you're starting to see him getting a little frayed. That's F-R-A-Y-E-D edges at this point, and maybe a bit afraid too, and a little exhausted and a little more obsessed. I feel like this episode 5 is very nippy. I feel like this episode and the following episode, we can't talk about that yet, the tone and pace are really finding a groove that's quite appropriate to this show. And as far as the relationship with Heineck goes, I felt that after the last episode, episode 4 with the rockets and the Nazi scientists, it could have gone either way. You know, there was a point in that episode where they could have parted ways or grown to dislike each other or be a little bit more guarded or competitive with each other. But in fact, it's kind of bolstered their relationship. But hopefully, you know, they're not going to become the same person because that would be boring. So I just feel like it's just for me or for Heineck, he's getting a little deeper into something that he's interested in, but maybe doesn't want to take over his life or threaten his family or himself in the way that it's shaping up.
Let me ask about that cool sequence with the romper and the transmission, because that's like a great Hynek nerd moment.
Yeah, actually, that was one of my favorite moments of shooting the whole thing, was driving along in the car with that aerial and kind of, you know, picking up the signal and aligning the pencil. It was very nerdy and satisfying. Also quite difficult to do all those things. When you're driving a tank down a road with like winos on it, you know, and operating things with four hands.
Yes. Yeah. We actually got a lot of input, I think, from Paul Hynek on that one.
Yeah.
He's
yeah.
telling us how it would actually work and yes. how you would triangulate and actually make that a realistic
thing. Well, because Hynek really was this total radio buff. He would find old radios and fix them up and ham radios and mess around with radios and stuff like that. Fortunately, I think we found a great way to kind of incorporate a real-life talent into the show. But I agree with you completely. Such an iconic Hynek moment of him holding this, like, antenna while driving a car and then also deciphering a hidden code.
Which is so
it's
great.
Just, it's satisfying in so many ways.
Two things. One, that was based on the actual secret radio stations that broadcast numbers
right,
that
yeah.
were
That's
for
right.
spies.
Yeah, number stations. Yeah.
Number stations,
yes.
Yeah. So it was based on that. Mm-hmm. But then when Hynek gets into Romper, quote unquote, I'm going to let Michael take it from
yeah,
here. Who does he meet in there?
Yeah, who is that?
Who is that?
That's my girl. Yeah. My wife, Nadine Lewington, is an actress as well. Mm-hmm. And she has a little cameo playing an erotic photographer. Typecast again.
It's such a great moment.
Which really came out of Sean had at one point brought up the Betty Page photographs.
Part of the idea behind that was Betty Page is very much an iconic figure. And
yeah.
she was mm-hmm. seen as this sort of prudish 50s housewife taking these very risque photos. And it was this sort of empowerment mm-hmm. that she was finding at the time. It was seen that way in hindsight, that it's this idea of a woman taking control of her sexuality.
Yeah.
And I felt like when you look at Mimi and you look at what's happening with Susie, mm-hmm. there was this desire to find that reflected back at the time as well.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't just let's get sexy women pinups in the show. It's like this is important, which is why her character even says it's about female empowerment.
Yep.
And
that's
I haven't
right.
found a buyer yet, but there are no accidents.
Yeah.
It wasn't just being salacious.
Right, for sure.
It's a woman running it as well.
Yeah. It's a great moment, and she does such a great job with that. When we do then realize that there's these secret photos, and that's huge, you get a view of Earth, not from Earth.
Right.
You're getting it from the sky, and that in itself is a huge revelation for these guys to chase down. And so the Kavanaugh moment, tell me about that, because it's they go in, they want to question the guy with the name on the back of the picture, and it gets a little intense.
Yeah, Aiden, you want to start off here?
Yeah, I guess in storytelling terms, the audience really doesn't know what's going to happen next, who's in there, what looks like an abandoned house. You certainly don't expect the guy to come out shooting, but that was a fun welcome. Yeah, it was kind of like dance fighting. We should tell them about the little clip that we made from the ADR room, that sequence.
That's oh, right.
That up, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's great.
Do tell.
Yeah, Aiden sent me this little clip when he was doing ADR for the episode of us jumping out of the way. The moment right when we jump out of the way
mm-hmm.
and just put that on repeat
yeah.
and
yeah.
it looks like we're
like a boomerang.
Doing a little boom.
And then he set it to music and it looks just like they're dancing back and forth.
It's a twerk
like,
off. Yeah.
You can stick that on there onto the extras.
Right.
But no, this is a great moment because it goes into this world of these ostracized pilots and the sheer extent of this thing
yeah.
and how long it's been going on. And it's a weird one for Quinn because, at least in my personal internal journey, I'm responding to the fact that these are my men,
yeah.
you know, and seeing what's happened to them and the repercussions of all of this stuff. You know, it's a huge, huge deal
it's
to
tragic.
Be cast out.
Yeah, these guys, when we see them all together and they are just victims of what's going on, what
yeah.
they think is happening, what you know has happened post-war for them, all of this is just a really sad visualization of the experiences that they've had to survive.
There's a great moment I really love where your character says, we can get you help.
Yes.
And he says, we know what kind of help the Air Force provides.
Yeah.
It's a powerful moment because you're like, okay, are these guys dealing with sort of what was not known as PTSD at the
mm-hmm.
time, but like, you know, some sort of shock from just the war and how horrible World War II really was. They certainly believe that they've seen things in the sky that they can't explain. It's simultaneously deepening the mythology of what's really going on. They've each been touched by their experience in some way. And then they've been trying to cope with how to reconcile that with this machine that, in Hynek and Quinn's eyes, ultimately is not doing what they claim. It's an interesting balance of emotions and thoughts and post-war trauma.
And I think it's a great moment of compassion and empathy that Quinn and Hynek are able to bring to these guys because they've been ignored. They have been not listened to, and they only have each other, and now these outside people. And I love the idea of Hynek being able to get their stories.
But it's nice to be able to bring the truth to them, you know, even if it's kind of heartbreaking for them. I mean, I think ultimately it's a good thing,
mm-hmm.
and that will go part way to healing them, if you like. But yeah, you're right. I hadn't really thought about that one for a while, but it's quite a sad, empathetic episode. And they all did have pretty sweet individual stories and characteristics and moments.
Yeah, and that young lad who played the
young kid.
The kid with the
yeah.
stars.
Oh, he was
yeah.
great. That
fantastic.
Actor was fantastic.
That's hard to
yeah.
do.
Yeah.
It's hard to do.
Mm-hmm.
And it was even a little tricky, I remember, with like VFX getting that shot right, too, because we're not in any way trying to make them look silly or
no,
anything like that.
Right.
It is kind of strange, but at the same time, it needs to look like ultimately like what it is, which is trucks up in the mountains,
mm-hmm.
you know, these lumberjacks.
Yeah.
Which was actually based on a real thing. I think there are tours out in Texas that
really?
Take people to see UFOs, and it got debunked as like you're looking at a road in the distance
right.
with headlights.
I want to talk a little bit about the Mimi and the neighbor, Donna.
Oh, Donna. Oh, Donna.
The biases, the curiosity and such. Because of the paranoia that's going on, and to personalize it was a really subtle but great moment, too.
I think that's where Donna's character came from, was to sort of highlight that and sort of contrast with where Mimi's home life is. You
yeah.
know, she's this very traditional, boxed in, and that has made her, if anything, more closed off, whereas Mimi is being opened up.
Mm-hmm.
So having her come by and that little quip about Hynek, it's Slavic, isn't
mm-hmm.
it?
That's right.
You know, is just, I think, a really nice, subtle touch about what's really going on underneath the surface. And then, obviously, Susie at the end,
yeah.
right, coming in. I think that's the meeting of the minds there.
Is mm-hmm. Oh, is that the episode where we meet?
That's
it
the
is.
Episode where you
yeah.
meet.
Yeah, she shows up at like 8 in the morning, and it's, you know, a little hair of the dog. And
mm-hmm.
That's right.
What is nice, too, is, you know, we've reached the halfway point of our season, and it felt like by introducing those two characters right there, you've just now opened up a whole new idea for story. And you've seen that Susie has now sort of jumped into the deep end, as it were, and hopefully you feel a little bit for Quinn like, oh boy, what's going to happen now?
Well, she's on the radar now, so
yeah.
she's
yeah.
got to be super, super sly. whistling with my ass.
I wanted to talk about returning to the abandoned amusement park. There's this great moment with Fuller, who, again, is another tragic character. You've approached the show by showing a lot of sympathy towards a lot of these service members who have not been given the protection that they need. And that's no recrimination against the body of military, but it's these individual cases that I think get lost in the sauce of history. But you guys get to show that it's not an idea and something that we read about in a case file. This is what it looks like on a person.
Fuller really was our way into this idea of the program that we allude to in the first episode about what they're really trying to do, sort of a deeper mythology of what they're doing to people who've been sort of touched by this phenomenon. Some of it was based on just story ideas we came up with. Some of it was based off of real life government precursors to MK Ultra,
right.
things of that nature that were happening at the time. And Fuller gets to be our tragic window that takes us through all this.
Yeah.
It's also a key moment because I find out that Hynek's been withholding this
right.
information from me after we leave the pilot's situation. So I think it's the first moment where there's like a big element of mistrust, at least from where I'm standing.
Yeah.
It was for your own safety.
yeah.
And yet they still yeah. managed to find a way to work together.
They've essentially covered up the death of someone.
Right.
You know, so that, again, was conscious to go, they're sort of bonded in this moment now. They both have skin in the game.
Right.
This is not something,
yep.
they have something on each other
yeah.
in a way. Mm-hmm. And so that tied them closer together, which was, you know, very important for us too.
Yeah,
that's right.
Totally.
Definitely. I mean, just the tragedy of the airmen we've seen earlier, you know, what we see with Fuller is someone who's been so tightly crushed in the vice that he pays for it by taking his own life. And it really pushes everything way across the line. I think it does definitely put them deeper into the game and strengthen their bond. I'm talking about Hynek and Quinn. What do you think, Michael?
Oh, definitely. It's a huge moment. Even Quinn, having been to the war and seen a lot of bad stuff, you see someone light themselves on fire. It's quite an extraordinary thing because of what happens to somebody mentally to do that self-sacrifice type thing for such a reason, you know. Actually, I don't know the reason. Quinn doesn't know the reasons necessarily. But it's just right when I go take a leak. It's like you go to the bathroom when your food arrives, right?
Right.
A similar kind of thing. Flame World Fuller.
Just like that.
That's right. Right? Like, and then, of course, you're holding Hynek back, too, because Hynek runs towards Fuller, you know, still trying to, like, save him.
Yeah.
Obviously, that's a practical stunt, so that allows for a moment rather than it being imagined. So how did you want to block it in a way so that Aiden could be in the moment with that?
I think Aiden was, if I remember correctly, you were insistent that we burn someone in front of you. Wasn't that right?
Somebody alive.
It's important for something like that. You can't always have it happening right in front of you. It was really helped with how we played that scene. It was intense, and I was concerned for the stunt guy's safety myself, because you are. There's an intensity there that's happening on set. I think that fed into our intensity and how we dealt with the situation.
And I just want to give a credit too to Norma, who was our director,
Incredible.
Who was
Norma
really
Bailey.
Insistent upon it as well, and rightly so. I mean, to your point, it creates an atmosphere, not just for the actors, but for the crew as well. That there is this seriousness to it. There is life and death being managed on set in that moment. And so, you know, she was insistent upon that.
Yeah, we got as close as we could to danger within the kind of safety net that was real. But you're right, those guys are setting themselves on fire in front of you. And as fascinating as that is to watch, you know, it puts you in the zone for sure. And I have a great appreciation also for our stunt guys. They were really good.
Absolutely.
So that leads into the little final last moment of the episode, which is the generals discussing Fuller's death. They have a lot more information than Quinn and Hynek do, than we do. And this is a moment which is a major period at the end of the sentence with him going, I think someone flipped his off switch. So when you're eking out a little bit of what the generals do or don't do or what we're allowed to see, tell me about where you are as writers at this point of the season with them and being deliverers of what we need to know and not know.
So this was actually for us like a big moment in the room where we figured out that obviously the program that Fuller was being initiated into that we talk about was inspired by MKUltra and these ideas, you know, remote viewing, that you could sort of be trained psychically.
Yeah, telekinesis.
To telekinesis all that, and all of that stuff. And so the big moment for us was Fuller saying they're using us as weapons so we can communicate with
them.
That felt like a brand new idea that hasn't been introduced in UFOlogy and in the MKUltra stuff. It's this notion that if you have been contacted or you feel you've been contacted, that you may be susceptible to being an antenna. And the military would go, man, that could be our channel. That's our bridge into this. So that is why they would try to find these people. And that explains the other pilots who would go, they want to introduce us to the program. Well, yeah, you've just essentially auditioned for them and said, we can have communication with them. So that's something we felt we wanted to contribute to the larger lexicon of UFOlogy and say, this is something that hasn't been explored. And it's sort of true. I mean, anybody who's supposed to be psychic has their antennas in a way, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
absolutely.
If you
that's
dive
totally
into
credible.
That stuff.
We sort of tease it one way as like, oh, they're erasing your memories or they're trying to make you forget. And then we flip that on its head by being like, the fact that you have the capacity to commune with whatever the nature is that we're dealing with is something that maybe we can weaponize, something that we want to control and something we want to use.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the symbol kind of being the trigger, this sort of on-off switch is something that we designed.
It's the Manchurian Candidate.
Manchurian Candidate idea of like, if anybody outside the program comes talking to you about it, there's an off switch. There's a fail-safe to protect this from ever being let out of the public about what we're really doing here.
There is a quiet moment towards the very last part of the episode where we get to have Hynek in his space. He's in his office. Aiden, you know, you've got a particular ring on. We get to see him taking notes. The office around him is a reflection of who he is as a character. And I like those moments.
You know, it's like a ring that the real Hynek used to wear. He didn't wear it all the time, but he had a turquoise ring, and it was even bigger than that. And sometimes he could be a snappy dresser. I mean, he actually was quite a snappy dresser, particularly in the later end of the 50s and the more beatniky period. But as I was dressed quite plainly, beautifully, but not too flamboyantly, I thought, let's just have at least that ring to just show a little bit of this flair, or a little bit of there's something more to this guy. You know, it's such a striking color and ring to have on your finger there. So it was a choice that I went after, but just based on something that the real Hynek wore. But it's nice to be in that space, to be in the office. I always like to see characters when they're not directly engaging with other people or talking, you know, just see people in repose of thinking and taking stock of things. So I always like to be in that office. For sure.
Yeah, this is the place where he can be in his thoughts, be in his notes, and try to make sense of all of the chaos that comes in.
Yeah, it's the place where things come together. And it is the place where things come together. It's behind it, you know, when you can sit back, take stock, and allow the pieces of the jigsaws to fit together, you know.
And be quiet before the storm starts all over again, which is in the coming episodes.
Yeah, yeah, that kind of thing.
Well, I want to thank you guys for being able to talk this episode over with me. Thank you, David.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Sean.
Thank you.
Thank you, Michael.
Pleasure.
And from over the sea, thank you, Aiden, for being in with us today.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you to Aiden again from across the sea, and David, Sean, and Michael for joining me in the studio again. Also, much love to my podcast team, producer Kirby Dixon, producer-editor Paul Terry, mixer and master extraordinaire Dave Draper, and LA Digital Recording for hosting us. So if you are enjoying the show, and we hope you are, please give us a review and subscribe on iTunes or whatever your subscription service of note is. Positive reviews help the profile of Project Blue Book and the podcast, so thank you to those who have done so already. And with that, we leave you for another week to ponder the questions of the universe as we remind you to keep watching the skies.